And because the fact was that once you dug into it, you discovered that there just wasn't a lot of law one way or the other saying what a fund inside of a corporation is and how it's supposed to be managed. And so you had a permanent fund. Mrs. Gottrocks had left you a lot of money, and she said, I want this to be an endowment, but can I just spend the pears, or can I spend part of the tree? Can I spend part of the capital gain? That was really where it was at, okay, was that under trust law, and those of you with any kind of background in like private banking or whatever will know this, that capital gain classically under trust law was considered corpus. It was considered part of the tree, part of the body of the corpus, Latin for body. Like it was considered something that you couldn't spend part of. And that was a big problem if you couldn't spend capital gains because, of course, in a well-diversified portfolio, sometimes part of your yield, and indeed by the year 2000, 2010, et cetera, a huge portion of your yield was actually in the form of capital gains. As we all know from looking at the major stocks of recent decades, the major companies that have come online that we didn't used to have even, that they grow through a capital appreciation. They don't grow, they don't pay out big dividends. Most people who hold Apple don't hold it for the dividends. People who hold Berkshire Hathaway don't really hold it for the dividends. I think it pays zero dividends, if I'm not mistaken. So this is what the question was about. And how to come up with the spending rate. Their survey concluded that people were horribly confused about it. Again, surprising. You know, this is like a field where the major universities of the United States, and they can't even agree about this question. But the beauty of this, and this was an America that was much less fractious than the America we seem to have today, was that once the Ford Foundation had released this report that said that this was just lore, and that the law was really to the contrary, that really a corporation should be able to spend a prudent portion of the appreciation on an endowment fund, whether it was interest or dividends or principal, that changed everything. And so within 5 years, the authors did and the Ford Foundation paid for a supplement to this. And the supplement basically said, our report actually has had an impact. A study was done by Nakubo looking at a bunch of colleges and universities. And I think 70% of universities were endorsing a total return concept, and they had a long list of very distinguished universities that in 1969 had followed the interest in dividends and only spending the apples and pears approach to actually going for a total return approach, which in turn affected asset allocations and in turn basically enabled college endowments and other kinds of institutional endowments to grow in the way that we see today. Now, a private foundation, to be clear, because we have private foundation people in the audience, private foundations almost never are true endowments. A true endowment is something that's created because the donor says, this is an endowment fund. The donor says, this fund shall last in perpetuity. This fund shall last forever. You've always got to have words like that to create a true endowment fund, okay? Most foundations don't have such language. Most foundations just say, here's a pot of money, go forth and do good with that. The federal tax laws say you've got to pay out 5%, or if you're a private operating foundation, you can pay out less than 5% under those complex rules that the people at the Stark Foundation, I'm sure, know from Part 14 of the 990 PF, which I always think is the best way to try to learn the private operating foundation distribution rules is to learn Part 14 of the 990 PF. There's a distribution rule for you, but you normally don't have one. And yet, at the same time, these principles of like long-term growth and how you deal with issues like inflation and like the erosion of purchasing power are very much at the center, I think, of what a lot of foundations are engaged in when they try to figure out, okay, we got to pay 5%, and we got to pay 3.25% or whatever it is, depending on what kind of foundation we are. And this is the bogey we have to meet. This is how we have to deal with inflation. Anyway, I think that this is relevant. Parts of this will be relevant to all of you. Some will be more relevant to some than others because it's largely a public charity issue, but not entirely. And the concepts, I think, are actually sort of inherently interesting anyway. There's another thing I want to note about this field is that it kind of has its own language about it. It has its own lingo, and the lingo is sometimes rather mystifying. And one thing I want to do is capture some of that. So I'm going to talk today about words that you may hear like underwater or the draw or intergenerational equity. I'm also going to talk about the methodologies of spending because there are two, other than the private foundation minimum payout requirement, there are really two other ways that institutions calculate spending from endowment funds. There's what's called, or what I call, the market value method, and then there's a method that's called the hybrid method. It's also sometimes called the Yale method because it was invented by somebody who taught at Yale, but because he'd gone to MIT, some people like to call it the MIT method, and because Stanford uses it, some people like to call it the Stanford method, and because I'm in Texas, I'm going to call it the SMU method because my alma mater uses it. That's the, and we'll talk about that in some detail. That's what these slides will be about. And finally, we'll also talk about mechanics of this, how people deal with things like new funds as they come in, underwater funds, the use of fractions and weighted averages, and a whole bunch of things that I hopefully won't be too terribly tedious. And I hope you come away from this with an improved vocabulary for how to think and talk about endowment-related concepts and portfolio-related concepts, and tools to use when you're working on gift agreements or when you're talking to a donor and who wants to do an endowment fund and thinking through what it is they're trying to say, because donors often actually have a whole bunch of stuff in mind, a lot of lore in mind, a lot of irrational fears in mind, a lot of debunked beliefs in mind when they want to start an endowment fund. Some donors are much more sophisticated than others, and they have excellent ideas in mind. Literally this afternoon, I'm getting ready for this talk, and I got an email from a client of mine with a billionaire donor who had an extremely sophisticated and really rather clever gift agreement for an endowment fund. And, so you sometimes you see them, people, they've thought this to death and they understand exactly how to do it, how to think about it.